Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
Hope you're all feeling as rough as we are, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome along to the USAS Survival Party as we look back on another Adam May screamer and all but the confirmation of another season in League One. As ever, plenty to talk about on today's show, but let's start with a little hangover sit rep. Tom Walker, how are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
Ooh, I'm low down. But happy because Cambridge United are going to stay up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of a mixture of emotions, really, isn't it? It's like the physical and the emotional sort of constantly battling. Yeah. Matt Caspel, you dipped out early last night, a bit of a French exit from you. Is that a sort of modelling yourself on Hervé Renard in all aspects of your life? Trying to be as French as possible?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Happy to have walked out.
That's why you started wearing your shirt unbuttoned to about the belly button now, haven't you?
The deep V. I think I need a chest implant if we're gonna go along with that.
Before we get into the football, let's just stay on the hangovers here. We've got a good question from Connor, which is, who's the biggest lightweight out of the UTAS crew? Thoughts, Caspel? I'm not suggesting you. I'm saying, what are your thoughts?
I back myself to be the biggest lightweight in any room that I'm in. And I think seeing as I bailed on you guys about 7 p.m. last night, then that's pretty cowardly behaviour, to be honest.
Tom?
I think we can just leave that conversation there, can't we?
All right, well, listen, let's start with the important stuff when we're talking about a 1-0 win at Wimbledon on Saturday. Andy has done some really heavy lifting. This is some serious graft here. This is the sort of stats that we need week in, week out on this podcast. He says, even though we have now broken the duck in the all-white kit this season, is it a time to return to amber shorts for our final three away games? And obviously, the UTAS line on this is yes, just full stop. But some of the stats here. All amber, played 6, won 3, drawn 2, lost 1. That's 1.83 points per game playing in all amber. In everything else, we don't even reach 1. I mean, in all white, it's 0.71 points per game. Caspel, do you think this is the biggest reason for some of our poor performances recently?
Oh, it has to be, right?
It simply has to be.
Should we now be trying different combinations? Like, there's no amber-white combo here. We could give that a go. Like, this black, is what the black. End of the season, yeah, the yeah, end yeah. season is for, right? It's just trying new stuff. So
black top, white shorts, white top. Mess about with it.
All goalkeeper kits at Sunderland or something like that. Yeah. Just see what happens.
Everyone in green or whatever.
Yeah, why not?
Right, well, I mean, in all seriousness, survival is all but confirmed now. I just want to start by sort of reflecting on the season as a whole. Obviously, we're going to get a chance to do this in the next few weeks as we sort of near the end of the season. There's a lot of end of season pods and that sort of stuff. But just sort of taking a moment to be like, we are safe, all but safe, right? 15 points clear of the relegation zone. Yes, that's right. For the purposes of the tape, Caspel's just celebrating there. We're all but safe now. We've got a nice 7 games at the end of the season, which we can really relax into. We'll come on to them in a minute. But Tom, just as a feat of a football club of our size, of our budget in this division, to stay up as early as the end of March, 7 games left. If I'd have told you that at the start of the season, what would you have said? I mean, we would have taken staying up by a goal, right? So how impressive has this been?
Yeah, I think if you said it at the start of the season, I probably would have popped your arm out of its socket and pulled it right off. It's been very impressive, I think. Probably the most impressive thing is that, like, the way that we've adapted to the level with players who, well, you know, let's turn the clock back 2 years. We weren't necessarily sure about a lot of these guys at League Two level, and the progression of some of these players. I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it in a minute, but guys like Adam May, Harvey Nibbs, for example, to do it with essentially the same team as last season, barring sort of one or two changes, I think is probably the most impressive thing. And yeah, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, the start of the season, you know, what he sort of hopes for the year, it's probably a really good season would be comfortable survival on a cup run, I guess. And, you know, tick both those boxes. So, you know, take that. Yeah, really good. And I think we've done it by exactly how we thought we would as well. We've beaten basically the crap teams in the league, like Wimbledon, for example. And we've come unstuck once or twice against what you'd say the better opposition in the league. And we've kind of picked up points here and there against the Midland team. So I think it's been, you know, a well-managed season in many ways. And it's something I guess we're coming to expect.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? We sort of have picked up points in the crucial moments, like looking at yesterday. And we do deliver, we have delivered on the whole in those sorts of games. Kasper, I think this is probably something that we'll analyse a lot more at the end of the season. But is there an argument to say that staying up with this sort of ease is more impressive than getting promoted from League Two? Just given the state of, you know, League One and the budgets and all this sort of stuff. Do you think there's an argument there?
Yeah, it's a big shout. I thought it was quite an interesting question when I saw it in the running order. Mm. Bit of a hospital.
I only ask interesting questions.
That's it. It's an interesting one, isn't it? They're both fantastic achievements. I think everything Tom said is right. And the fact that we're all sat here and we've stabilised in League One with the squad we've had, we didn't make many signings. We sort of held on to a pretty similar side. We lost Paul Mullin, obviously. Tend not to like talking about the guy, but... For a lot of other clubs, if they come up and they lost their top goal scorer, it would be a serious problem for the following season. As Tom said, Newcastle, fantastic experience. So having the cup run was amazing. And obviously not directly related, but to be buying the ground back all in the same season says to me, this has just been a hugely successful campaign on and off the field. Absolutely yeah. Delighted. Whether it's almost not worth comparing the two. I'd just treat it all as one big, enjoyable two-year period under Mark Bonner. That's just been... fantastic, just to completely shirk answering the question.
one long journey that we're still on, something yeah, like that.
That's it.
Well, let's go to the man of the moment for yesterday. Let's just take it as, you know, the game in isolation. Adam May has really developed this knack of only scoring sort of long range goals from outside the box. Is this the best of the lot, Kasper?
Oh man, I mean, it was great, wasn't it? He's such a long way out. I sent you a message
It's way further out than I thought.
He's further out than I thought he was, and he's hit the ball seriously hard. I'm not an AFC Wimbledon fan, so I don't have to worry about whether or not the keeper should have saved it. Yeah.
I thought he had, though.
I thought he had saved it, but we'll let them do that on their pod and they can moan and miser about that. Let's not worry about that. He's hit it so hard. It's got a huge amount of curl on it. He has really blasted the ball. So what a way to start the second half. And yeah, what a reputation for him to be building. It kind of ties back to something we've been talking about over the last few weeks on the pods, which is just think we need to shoot more. It sounds really basic. And actually I'm doing a bit of a disservice to like the build up play for that was quite good. You can't just shoot. You need to create space and opportunity to get your shots away. And I think that's probably where we had the biggest challenge yesterday was actually in chance creation. But I would like to just see a bit more speculation from our midfielders. You know, we know that O'Neill can do it. We've seen him do it before. We know that May can do it. I'm sure Digby can. Obviously took his goal really well at Rotherham, a bit more of a tap inside foot type thing. But just have a go. I can't picture our fan base being too irate if we had a few long-range efforts every game that didn't quite work out, because we obviously... you're playing the percentages at that point. But yeah, I would just like to see us do more, but it's great. You now feel like when Adam May picks up the ball and he gets a pocket of space and he's anywhere within about 40 yards out from goal, it's a cause for excitement. And it's not very often we've had United players where that is necessarily the case. So,
And you'd even stretch that to like opposition teams that are probably doing their preparation and research on us, right? They'll know this about Adam May. And I don't know, you think, you know, he picks the ball up in a bit of space, 25, 30 yards out, a keeper's suddenly like, well, here we go. He might hit this. And
what you hope is you've seen them at that point. If they've done their research, someone might dive in. And if he's if he's a smart footballer, which I think he is, intelligent, then maybe he's able to shift the ball to someone else and create an awful lot of space. So
it's just a really good threat, isn't it? It's another option. Tom, we've had a question from Hugh, which is on a scale of 1 to 10, how class is Adam? as he calls him, the sexy long range specialist May, which is, it's not catchy, but I rate it, it's accurate. Do you think though, my question to you is, do you think we're going to struggle to keep hold of him in the summer?
I guess in the, you know, the season that he's had, yeah, well, there'll be interest. I suppose you'd like to think that having had the 2 years that he's had, working with a manager that you know as well, and obviously I think he knows Waddock from, I think Waddock was at Portsmouth when he was coming through as well. A place that, you know, he's got, you know, a place in the team, which is not a given if he, you know, if he was to go somewhere else. I'd like to think that if an offer came in from, say, a similar sort of level of club, which I think probably that's what it would be, I'd like to think he'd maybe choose us over them. But, you know, he's played himself into, I guess, a situation where he might have a bit of choice in the summer, which I suppose if he'd said at the start of the season, some people might have scoffed at a little bit. I think midfielders that have an eye for goal and can score, especially central midfielders that can score sort of between 5 and 10 goals a season, at this level, they are going to be like a fairly rare commodity, I think. So, yeah, I guess there'll be, you know, one or two maybe having a look where maybe they mightn't have done before. But, yeah, I think it's just good to see the progression of a player like that, because I think we knew that he was, you know, throughout last season, we knew he was like quite a tidy footballer. He kind of keeps things ticking over quite nicely in the central midfield. But a lot of the times the discussion we were having is like, where's the kind of bite to what he does? Like, where's the tangible return on what he's doing? Mm-hmm. So to see him add goals to his game is certainly very positive. And yeah, always nice when they fly in from 30 yards out, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's also funny, isn't it, when there's goals that go in just after half time, because there's plenty of people just queuing up for beers or missed it.
Did you see this one, Tom? I know you missed Ironside's goal at Newcastle. That was also just after half time as well. So
yeah, just a solid 15 minutes after half time.
Yeah, I saw this one. Thanks.
Congrats, mate.
Good. Yeah.
Lightweight.
There's your answer, Connor. Let's talk about someone else for a second. Who, let's say yesterday, right? We got the job done. It's the most important thing, as we were saying just before we started recording. It's points over performances at this point in the season. But in what was a pretty turgid first half, one player who stood out, just so resilient, so committed to everything, was Harrison Dunk, who we have spoken about a lot this season. Caspar, I'll give this one to you, because we were talking during the first half. You were like, you made a great point. You were like, I mean, there were points where we were criticising him as a conference left winger. And now he's not just that he's not out of place in these sides. He was, for me, my man of the match yesterday.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, it's always just great to see. He's proved probably the whole fan base at some time wrong. And I remember, yeah, even as you say conference, there were question marks like, is he good enough to get us out of the conference? Clearly he was. Clearly he is. And you have to be honest with it. I mean, I'm not sure anyone could have said with a great degree of confidence that him, and maybe Greg Taylor has obviously been out all season, but would be able to make the transition. But what you can say for sure is that he's definitely an intelligent footballer. There's no doubt about that. And I always think if intelligent footballers like him, O'Neill, May, are people who are capable of perhaps playing slightly beyond their physical like ability almost. And he was just terrific yesterday. Like, it was proper smart football, brave football, and also just, just properly courageous, flying into challenges, winning a lot, and having to soak up a lot of pressure. I sort of thought about, like, did we actually play well yesterday as a team? I'm not sure that we played particularly well, but I would say that we defended really, really well. I think actually the whole back four comes out with a lot of credit. So, it's not as easy to say maybe we didn't play so well. I just think, again, it was chance creation was the problem for us. Dunk's been great. I mean, it's just great to have him. I'm sure you'll ask at some point whether or not we should be retaining him for next year. We can get on to for sure. Great. But I mean, the point you've put in the running order that I think I mentioned yesterday at the game as well is it's maybe a slight point of concern when Harrison Dunk is the best player you have on the pitch. And that sounds like a really harsh criticism. It's not supposed to be. It's not intended that way. But
especially when you're playing a team like that, right? It's like,
we want to see our creative play. You know, you want to see our creative players. You want to see Nibs in the hole, maybe being our most influential player, or Ironside, or, you know, something something that makes it feel like we've gone to Wimbledon, played really attacking, progressive football, created a lot of challenges and won the game. So maybe it's a bit of that, but look, it's just great to see him playing this well. So yeah, hopefully that continues the rest of the season.
Yeah, long may it continue. He's really cementing himself as a legend of the football club, if he wasn't already. Just the performance in general yesterday, Tom, like Casper sort of mentioned it there, a slight frustration just because, I mean, I doubt any Wimbledon fans would be listening to this, but they, for me, were the poorest team that I've seen this season. They just had, they had nothing like at home against a team like us on the sort of run that we're on. Like they needed maximum points. And if you look at their running, it's awful. And they just sort of never looked like scoring to me. Is there a bit of frustration from a United perspective for you, Tom, that we didn't actually go there and assert ourselves and play the game on our terms enough? Because there was a lot of soaking up pressure. There was a lot of them with the ball. And then obviously we made the most of the one shot on target that we had.
Yeah, I was kind of pondering this morning, to be honest. I guess the first thing that you've got to say is that you've got to respect any point, especially any away win that you get at this level, just for what it is. Just accept it for what it is, you know, a win on the road. Clearly the big caveat to that is that Wimbledon were genuinely atrocious. I lost count of the amount of times they'd play like a crossfield pass and just float over the head of the person they were trying to pass it to. And like, you know, like you think like seasons gone by where like we've looked at our forward options, at, you know, at the sort of the level below, and we've been like, where is a goal coming from? And I look at them and they're sort of very much in that mold. The sort of cart horse out up front. Like, I think there was one moment where he sort of turned in the box a little bit and I think he put it over. But other than that, like we weren't under too much pressure. I think I get where that sort of suggestion would come from, that it's maybe an opportunity for us to show that we are genuinely better than like a team that's just going to be scrapping around for survival come the end of the season, which, you know, the table doesn't lie, you know, at this time of the season we are. But I can't, you know, clearly I can't be too bogged down with it. I get that you're not saying it, but like, I get it. Like the point you're clearly not making is that like, you know, you expect to go down and win 3 or 4-0 just because like Wimbledon are terrible, control the game, all that sort of stuff. But I do appreciate there's like a middle ground there somewhere sort of just kind of going there, you know, sort of getting over the line and sort of battering them. Like there's a way to like control the game. Like we didn't create really any chances, did we, yesterday? No. I think we had that one header that went over just after our goal.
He couldn't do much more with that, from my memory, on the top of his.
I think that's been one theme all season that we've talked about, is that chance creation. And if there's one part of the performance which, you know, maybe frustrates me a little bit, is that even against a team like that, it's still lacking a little bit. But like, you know, even throughout last season, like we consistently like overperformed this. So I think this is just a trend of a Mark Bonner team, to be honest. In itself, this conversation showcases the progress that we've made over the last sort of 9 months or so, because to be sat here, you know, recording the day after we've just beaten a League One team away from home to basically secure our survival, and to be picking points out of that performance that can be improved on, I think in itself is just a sign of the progress. So yeah, I know what you mean, but not too frustrated.
That's exactly it. It's not even a scoreline thing. I'm not saying, like you said, that we should go there and, you know, batter them just because they're 21st or whatever in the league. It's more just a comment on, like, I think we're a better football team than what we actually showed yesterday. But obviously then, you know, you're coming off the back of 5 winless games, and I'm sure there's a few nerves in there. Like, they knew that yesterday was a bit of a must not lose, wasn't it, really? Let's be honest. In the grand scheme of things. So I'm sure there was a few nerves in there anyway. Casper, let's go back to what you were saying about the defence. This is from Jord. We were loving Lloyd Jones's shithousery yesterday. On a scale of 1 to Sergio Ramos, how would you rate his shithousing yesterday?
Yeah, it was high on
the moment where he just pushed someone.
Yeah, I forgot about that, actually. Yeah.
Brazenly just like, yeah, there you go, have that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a funny thing. It's something I know over more than 2 decades, there's always been the complaint from our fan base that we are like not nasty enough and we need to get better at like running the clock down, managing games, managing situations. And I do think under Bonner the last few years, we are, without going full Ainsworth. We are getting better at it. We are sort of showing a bit more intelligence. And that for sure was a game yesterday where he just wanted to suck the life out of it completely, which I know you're going to ask about Wes at some point. We'll definitely, yeah, it's an interesting thing about the substitutions we use. But yeah, no, good to see from Jones. He can definitely keep that up. I just think whenever we do that sort of stuff, we need to do it in as intelligent a way as possible. But
yeah. Would you say him and Okadina is our strongest centre-half pairing now? Is that something that this has shown to you, do you think? And would you be confident going into next season with them two as our centre-halves and then Taylor as cover and maybe like a loney, like a sharing or something? Assuming Ardell's gone.
Assuming Ardell's gone and not playing at centre-back, then
yeah,
I would say these two is probably our strongest pairing. I thought defensively we were pretty sound yesterday. Again, I don't think Tom is right. I don't think Wimbledon posed the biggest challenge that we're gonna see, but still, yeah, I thought it was a pretty sort of encouraging performance from those two. I would feel confident going into next season with those two. And again, maybe as well as having Taylor, you might look to sign another sort of young centre-back just to apply a bit of pressure and just to have the ability to rotate as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll come on to a bit more sort of squad retention stuff in a bit. Let's move on to this Wes conversation, shall we? Let's start with it this way around, though. So last week against MK, obviously none of us were on the pod last week, but they spoke about it. The lads spoke about it last week. But Nibs playing in the hole last week, to me, was a fairly, a really smart selection last week, because it was just, you know, he was running, we weren't going to have the ball, and he was putting loads of pressure on that MK back line. To go sort of back to that conversation we were just saying, Tom, that it seemed like we did the subs the wrong way around. It feels like you wanted to start with Wes, play 60 minutes with Wes, trying to create chances, have a bit of the ball, and then bring Nibs on when you're 1-0 up to have someone to chase the ball around.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was a little bit of an odd one, to be honest. It was similar to like a Newcastle, wasn't it? Where like he came on for like the last 10 minutes and you're thinking like...
And he was rubbish.
Like, we are 1-0 up away from home against Premier League opposition. Like, yeah. Do we really need to be bringing on like a flair player now?
Yeah,
it was a bit like... I think the thing with Wes is like... I think we've touched on it a few times when we've talked about him. It's like, I think sometimes it can be less what he actually does and more what he sort of brings to the team in terms of like... just raising the standards a little bit and just like a bit of experience on the pitch. And that's not to say that Harvey Nibs didn't do a good job and doesn't sort of offer that, because I think, you know, his work rate and the way that he sort of harries defenders is a really useful asset. But I do think it's better suited to games like MK Dons, for example, where, you know, you sort of expect that they're back three or back four or whatever it is, you know, have a lot of the ball and there's going to be a lot of need for that. Whereas against a team like Wimbledon, like I think you could rightly expect us to have a bit more control of the ball, which I think we did, you know, for large parts of the game. And, you know, we just talked about chance creation there. It might have been good to have someone who can actually make use of that ball in those sort of first moments. I mean, like, I can't quite stress enough, like, they were terrible. Like, they were abysmal. And, like, to have someone like that on the pitch, you can just sort of pull the strings a little bit from the start, I felt would have been ideal. I was a bit surprised not to see him back in the team, to be honest. I thought... we've almost settled into the same sort of rhythm as we were at the end of last season with Wes, where we've kind of found a bit of a formula. You don't play him against the good teams, basically, because we're not going to have the ball, but you play him against the crap teams because we are going to have the ball. And that seems pretty sensible. But I guess there's a part of that, I guess the thinking from Bonner is that, A, Harvey Nibs had a good game against MK Dons, albeit a couple of poor finishing, etc. But I thought what he actually brought to the team is really good. So part of it might have been that he's played his way in to being picked again. But I would suggest that the rest of it is just kind of respecting a little bit the fact that, you know, whatever we think of Wimbledon, we're still going away from home in League One, and you can kind of expect that a game should go in one way where they're sort of pressuring ours and they're kind of on the front foot. It didn't turn out like that because, like I've said before, they literally don't have the ability to do it.
So what do you really think about Wimbledon, Tom?
I was so disappointed, you know, because like... I don't know if we'll talk about the ground later and stuff like that, but like, it's such a good day out. Like, it's a nice part of London, especially at that time of the year. And like, just get rid of Fleetwood. Get rid of Fleetwood.
More than Fleetwood.
Like, keep Wimbledon. Like, don't, you know, but yeah.
From now, I'm going to be looking out for their scores every week. Just just to make sure that I'd much rather they stay up. Also,
it's not going to go well, Jules.
It's not, is it?
If you've looked at their running, hold on, let me hit you.
Here we go.
They've got Wednesday away next.
Interesting.
We know what can happen there.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily have to happen because it doesn't seem to happen to anyone else, but we know what can happen. Then they got Charlton at home, and then they got MK at home.
MK are gonna
spicy. They've got a crew away, which obviously at this point, wow. They might have lost what, four in a row at this point, or how many they've lost, sort of five, six in a row. And then Wickham at home, Fleetwood away, and then Accrington at home. So that Fleetwood away game on the 23rd of April could be sizable, I would say. But I fear for them, to be honest.
Same. I mean, it's crazy though that that's 21 games they haven't won in since the 7th of December. I think they're level on points or a point behind Fleetwood.
A mad league table.
Let's forget about Wimbledon for a second. We will come onto the ground. Question for you, Matt, on Wes. Adam's asked, and also I'll take this moment to say thanks again for your questions. Obviously, send them in every week. He says, controversial one, but should he have stayed on the bench yesterday? It didn't seem to make much impact to the game. Tom sort of just covered that. But my question for you is, how... do you think this is a sign of us sort of preparing for life without Wes?
To not have started him and to start Nibs instead. Mm. I definitely think with Nibs, we're trying something, obviously. It's something a bit different. And we've reached that point in the season where, with the points we have now, we've earned the right to try a few things. So, Bonner and Co. are a smart bunch, so they will be thinking about continuity, and they were thinking about what happens. I think one of the other sort of weird paradoxical good things that's happened this season is that we have reduced our reliance on Wes, and being less reliant on Wes as we were in League Two is definitely a good thing, because we know for sure he has an expiry date, obviously. So whether or not he should stay next season is also another sort of big debate, I would think, or whether he will stay is probably a big question. So I think it's good to try stuff. I would like to see us try some other stuff. So I wouldn't mind to see Lancaster. And you might think he has a bit of a point to prove for next week as well. But then equally, you might also say it, Caspel.
We all know who you want to say.
But maybe Wes. Oh, no, what? Akambi or McConnell? Yeah.
Nascimento,
McConnell.
Get the Brazilian startlet.
Get some Brazilian flair going, for the end of the season. Maybe Wes will want to have a bit of an impact at Ipswich as well. So there could be quite a few of our midfielders who want to start next Saturday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having a chat about that in a second. Just while we're on this sort of attacking area of the pitch, Tom, is I really hate to give you the credit for this, Ironside Smith. Is Ironside's goal scoring form a concern, or do you think he adds enough to the side in, you know, with his hold up play and everything else that he brings? But sort of as a second question, would you consider maybe at Ipswich, you know, starting Smith up top like he did so well at Oxford, sort of on the break using those chances? Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I want to say that I love Joe Ironside. It's very much a picture being painted that I really don't like him, it seems. couldn't be further from the truth. I think the thing with Joe Ironside that we've said time and time and time again, like, it's really good that he's found a knack of scoring goals this season, you know, because he scored quite a few goals last season as well, but he has become like a really good penalty box striker during this season, which is great. So you look at a run of games where he hasn't scored any goals, and that can be a concern, but the thing with Joe Ironside is that he brings so much to the rest of the team. I mean, you look at our goal yesterday, it comes from his sort of harrying at the ball and sort of chasing what I guess to a lot of strikers would have been a lost cause. And he ends up setting up Adam May for the winner. So that doesn't really concern me too much. I mean, yeah, like, it's great to have your number nine scoring the goals, but if he's contributing to the way they're being created, then that's as good for me. I think in terms of, like, how do you approach Ipswich, like, I think we're going to need Joe Ironside in that game. We're going to need the ball to stick up front. Mm-hmm. And I actually think Sam Smith in the air is actually pretty decent. He wins his fair share of headers. But I'm not sure you want to be going into that game just sort of, because inevitably what's going to happen, and we've seen it time and time again, is we spend 90 minutes pumping it up long to a striker like Smith, who for all of his qualities is not a target man, and the ball just comes straight back. And in a game like that, you don't want, as soon as you relieve the pressure, you don't want it straight back on you. So I think I'll stick with Joe. I get why there might be a bit of discussion about a bit of a goal drought for him. But I'm not too concerned because what he brings to the rest of the team is so important.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Let's sort of go from there into this question on the summer. Let's look forward a little bit because we have the ability to do that. We've got two questions here. I'll ask both of you this. So Daniel's asked, who can/should we look to retain for next season and where do we need strengthening most? And sort of on the back of that, have we any hope of keeping Iredale? And sort of as a flip to that, Joe says, is there actually a case of saying we don't actually need to strengthen this summer and we could kick on next season without adding to the squad? Casper, I'm sure you're going to sit on the fence somewhere in between those two things. But you know, if you're going to strengthen, where are you looking to strengthen?
Hey, don't call me splinters for nothing, mate. I thought about this, actually, and I've created, or maybe just fathomed from my memory, a very sort of Martin Ling-esque phrase to how I think we will need to approach squad in the summer. I think it's like evolution, not revolution.
Wow.
That's David Brent. That's not Martin Ling. That's David Brent.
It's about, that sounded, it also sounded worse when I actually said it as well, I think. I think my point there, I mean, actually what I would say is that I would actually retain every single member of the squad. So that makes life a lot easier. But we should be looking to supplement that with, I would say, two or three more bodies. And I don't know if that will happen because of the philosophy around squad size. But I think we saw a few times this season, we definitely were just short on numbers of people. I mean, our bench at Newcastle was youthful, let's say. Mm. Not a big problem for us that day, but over the course of a long, hard season with lots of sort of Tuesday night games, Pizza Trophy, League Cup, yeah, FA Cup, sort of, we can see that really built up over time. So my sense would be in terms of strengthening specific positions, I think it's probably a case to get another centre back. I think we definitely need probably more competition for goalkeepers. So I think we need, you're looking to get someone who will actually put a bit of pressure on the existing first team players. Mm. I think we definitely need centre midfielder. I think that's become quite clear over the last few weeks that maybe we're a little bit short on depth in that department. And then to be honest, I think at that point you can maybe make a case to get another striker, but we need to look at like what we're able to do on loan versus who you're signing on permanence. I actually don't think we need to hugely reinforce the squad with many permanent signings. Obviously that changes if someone like Jack Iredale goes. I think what Tom said about Adam May earlier is true. I would hope if they got offers from similar clubs that they would stick around because we're building something really exciting still. Mm-hmm. But I think I can probably speak on behalf of most of the fan base when I would say if any of these guys get a move to even a top of League One or sort of Championship club, then they're going to go with like our absolute best wishes. And I hope they are able to kick on and I hope it works out for them really well. So if Iredale goes and he goes to a good Championship club and he gets himself a first squad place, then I'd be so happy for him. Yeah. Same with Adam May, same with anyone else. It'd be sad for ourselves, but it's a sign that we're doing really good things at this club. So if people do go, then I also have a really good amount of faith in the unit of people and the often maligned Ben Strang to be able to... I'm confident they will already be working and have a list of people who would potentially replace the likes of an Ironside or an Iredale or whoever it is that might go in the summer. I think that work will already be well underway. So I feel confident we would recruit in the right way at least.
I mean, the recruitment in the past few years has been nothing short of spot on. I've got complete like blind faith at this point in whoever it is that they go on to sign in the summer. Interesting you say centre mid though. That does seem to me that role alongside Digby, obviously May can play, but I much prefer May when he's playing further forward. And you'd like to think, like you said there, that, I mean, these guys are so invested in this project, right? You hear like Williams talking about how from the moment that he met Bonner, he was like 100% sold on his vision and the club and like the togetherness. And you can see, like, I know it's a bit of a sort of waffly point, but like Jones at the end of the game yesterday, you just like it. It does seem like they're so invested in this project and this team and this squad. And I think that will be a big factor, unless it's that big move that I'm sure Iredale will be able to find. Tom, what do you think? Is there any areas that you're looking at specifically this summer?
I think centre mid's the one. We're talking about potentially life after Wes Houlihan pushing out of
bay. Don't say it. So I'm fragile here, Tom.
That actually made me maybe wince a little bit saying that sentence. I think the ideal thing for that is pushing Adam May up a little bit into that sort of more advanced role. You know, his ability to get on the end of things, sort of create chances, you know, shoot from long range is something we've talked about for a little while now. But I think it'd be nice to have someone like Liam O'Neill, someone who can basically be relied upon for like 40 appearances a season. I think our summer business is going to be dictated by a couple of things. Obviously, the first thing is what Caswell's touched on there about players, interesting key players in this team, which might force our hand in terms of what we need to do or don't need to do. The other thing is obviously the loanees that are here now. I don't think there's a massive case for really busting a gut to get any of the loanees back necessarily. Not that I would be against seeing them, any of them here again next season. Bit disappointing that we've not seen more of Jensen Weir across the course of the year, but you know, shit happens basically. Sharing, I believe, is available potentially on a permanent deal in the summer. So, you know, potentially might be the centre back that Caspel mentioned there. Tolage, I think we can shuffle around a little bit. I think for me, like Caspel, basically retain most of our squad. They certainly get the offer, and if other things come in, then other things come in. But I think for me, there's two really big question marks in terms of keeping players. The first one is O'Neill. Nothing to do with what he contributes on the pitch, nothing to do with his ability, more than good enough League One footballer, but it's just the amount of game time that we're getting out of him. We've seen across the course of, it's probably kind of like 5 years now, isn't it? First of all, like in the first couple of years, it was through suspension mainly. Now it's through injury. As sad as it is, I just don't think he can be relied on for, you know, the amount of game time that we need from a player in a smaller squad, especially in a crucial role like that. So if it's the choice between, unfortunately, having to let someone like that go and bring in someone with like an established, like quality League One footballer with like a more durable track record, I think that's a decision that might have to be taken. The other one, the big one, I guess the discussion is going to be had far and wide across Cambridgeshire over the next few weeks is about Houlihan. It feels to me like the games that he can and should play in are becoming ever more limited. Like we mentioned at the start of the pod, that there's a very specific type of game in which we should play him. That's a Saturday afternoon against a shit team. And they're like, there's not many of those games in a season. So I guess part of it is up to what he wants to do. You know, does he feel that he's got it in him for another year? Would he like to maybe drop down a little bit and maybe enjoy his football a little bit more rather than be sort of a hard slog like it might have been at times during this season? Clearly, if he wants to do it and he wants to stay, then, you know, I'd obviously keep the guy because he's a brilliant footballer. But I think a bit like O'Neill, the question is, in a smaller squad, can he contribute enough time on the pitch to sort of get a return on the investment? I think there's a question mark over that, but that's one for more knowledgeable bodies than myself to tackle. I think the really key thing for the summer, away from who we sign, what positions we strengthen, who comes, who goes, is we've got to be really careful when we're sort of changing the squad, because this is like a crucial moment, I feel, in our sort of development over the next few years, is that, of course, you want to grow as a team and you want to bring in more quality and you want to get better as a unit, but you've got to do that somehow while like balancing, basically ripping out the core of the squad, guys like Greg, guys like Harrison, who have been here for a long time and contributed very well, with like bringing in that quality in. Like you probably remember the season after we got promoted back to League Two, we obviously had this team of players that we were very invested in, guys like, you know, Chadwick, guys like Tom Champion, for example. We obviously got the windfall from the Man United FA Cup games and just went out and basically like spent it all on like guys like Keith Keane, Elliot Omazuzi, guys like that. And yeah, we got rid of these players that we really liked, really invested in, that basically put everything on the line for the club and brought in a load of guys who, I guess, individually might not have been as bad as it turned out, but basically weren't invested in the club. And like, you don't want that, like, especially with where we are in League One, like you need players who are going to be really sort of willing to do whatever it takes to, you know, basically for the cause. And I think that is a challenge for Ben, you know, someone like Ben Strang, for example, who I think gets, for some reason, quite a lot of stick, which I find quite odd. There have been times when since he's returned to the club where it's been merited, you know, the infamous free striker saga of, I believe, 2019. But I think
hindsight, Tom. in hindsight,
it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. 2020 vision, isn't it? But yeah, I think that's basically their challenge, is to somehow improve the quality in the squad, but keep the sort of desire and heart and willingness and sort of passion for the club, I guess. Yeah. That's not easy to do.
It's so evident, isn't it? You just have to look at like the players after a win. Like you can tell that they love each other and they love the club and they love the project, all this sort of stuff. And I do have this faith that they'll recruit based on players who are going to fit that, right? It's like a personality fit. There'll be a lot of personality first signings, I think. But yeah, adding a little bit of quality is going to be crucial. Just let's wrap up on Wimbledon. Obviously the first time at their new ground. Kieran's asked, who else is gutted we won't be going there again next year? Decent little ground, class atmosphere from the away end. Which, as we've just covered, I mean, you know, they might stay up, and I hope they do stay up. But I've got about as much faith as Chris, who was on the pod last week. Casper, is their ground a good blueprint for us? Would you say? I mean, it's hard for anything new to have character, but is there something in it, do you think, as new grounds go?
It's not as bad as some of the new grounds we've been to. I'm thinking, what's the worst? Something like Colchester.
Colchester, about as
bad as it can possibly get.
Even like Oxford, which I know isn't new, but like it's like
Oxford, a little bit like the out of town thing. Yeah. The weird thing when you get these London clubs is that where you draw the boundary lines on what Wimbledon is or isn't is quite sort of indistinct. It's just sort of a big like urban area that doesn't necessarily have an absolute sort of centre. So that makes it a bit harder than maybe for some other clubs where Oxford has a city centre, Cambridge has a city centre. Mm-hmm. I thought the ground was smart, but I don't know if that's what I want for us necessarily. I do think for us as an away fan base, it's a great away end though. Great size for us to pack out pretty much any time we go there, and obviously to make a really good amount of noise like we did yesterday. And the only thing I'll say is that you're always going to be quite close to the pitch in that away end, which I think is quite a nice thing. So gave us a really good perspective on Adam May's finish yesterday. But yeah, I don't know about it for me. I think if we ended up in something like that, it wouldn't be the worst outcome, but it's probably not the best. Let's just keep the Abbey and just do some fun stuff there instead.
The worst thing about it is running out of beer at half time and a sold out away end, surely. I mean, that's
weird. Flat beer as well, like not good beer.
But impressively flat.
Impressively like, flat.
I've never seen also, something so flat.
It just looked like a really good selection. So, but then, no, didn't deliver. So, better than what we get at the Abbey, which is nothing. But
yeah,
still not great.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll have to shout out Jord, who will no doubt be screaming for the food trucks that they've got in the home end at the Abbey. But let's move on. Next week, another big one, another sold out away end at Ipswich. Let's go over to Jord's preview with Ben from the Kings of Anglia podcast.
Right then, news fans, I'm joined by Ben from the Kings of Anglia podcast, a podcast where they discuss all things Ipswich Town. Very kindly going to give us some insight to our trip to Portman Road on Saturday. Ben, thank you very much for joining us. Is it a weird one that little old Cambridge are coming to Portman Road for the first time in 30 odd years for a league game?
Thanks, Jordan. Thanks for having me on. Answer your question. I guess slightly, you know, I'm not too big-headed to think, Ipswich are this sort of Premier League in waiting football club. We're certainly not, you know, we have had a fall from grace, I think, in the respect we're in League One, but we're not big-headed and thinking we don't belong in this league. We're in the league for a reason. And clubs like Cambridge have done incredibly well over the last few seasons to be possibly, I don't know if Cambridge fans is going to annoy people, maybe slightly now traditionally punching above your weight, but good on Cambridge for doing so. You know, no, I make no secret of being from Cambridge, and I look at Cambridge and think, you know, what a bloody well-run club and how well Mark Bonner's done over the few years. And if we'd had our ducks in line as well as Cambridge had, then we wouldn't be in the position that we are. So it is a little bit of a surprise, I guess. But again, we've had clubs come to Portman Road this season. Cheltenham sort of stands out. I think it's Tuesday night. They had 137 fans. So for me, going on Saturday, looking forward to seeing 2,000 Cambridge fans there, it will make for an absolutely brilliant atmosphere. And I'd far rather a game like that than, I say, those Cheltenham games or, you know, Morecambe at home. Or, and it has nothing against these clubs either, but it is, it's so much better to have a bigger, in inverted commas, game. And I'm sure there'll be lots of sort of banter flying around on the day saying, Ipswich fans will be saying to Cambridge, you're only here for the Ipswich or something like that. How was your big day out? But so what? Even if Cambridge are buying a ticket because it's coming to Portman Road for once in 30 years, it should be a fantastic game. A great atmosphere, a really good event. I really obviously hope we don't lose because, you know, Cambridge underdogs almost in any era playing Ipswich Town, and with the run of form currently, then even more so at the moment, I think.
Ben, I've got loads of questions about the Ipswich squad, but before I get to those, I have to loop back to the title of your podcast, Kings of Anglia. I just wondered what the criteria of being a King of Anglia was. And could I suggest that someone who admittedly is Irish, but lives in the region and has played at the Euros and school at the Euros qualifies as a King of Anglia?
Oh, you're talking about Super Wes Houlihan, of course, who will be the scourge of 3 o'clock at Portman Road. I mean, he will get all sorts of stick. I mean, I think mostly tongue in cheek. I'm sure there'll be a few Ipswich fans that take it too far, like any football club. But I guess if it pains me to say it, he did incredibly well at that club up the road, who play in a less attractive yellow than your fantastic Amber Army. I'm sure at Carrow Road he was regarded as the Kings of Anglia. I think the editors of the newspaper, the East Anglian Daily Times, it all comes from them, and I think they would call themselves the Kings, as they were on the podcast. They do a podcast Monday and Thursdays with the journalists and the sports editor, who's the head of the sports of the paper, Mark Keith. They do a very good job, and I think they sort of christened themselves the Kings, or the Kings of Anglia. All tongue in cheek. It's not taken seriously, but. Like, if we have to talk about Wes Houlihan for this whole whole piece, Jordan, you're not going to get much out of me. He's a bloody good he's surprised many by doing so well, I think, coming to Cambridge. I'm pleased that you have a godlike figure at your club joining the echelons of Dublin Claridge Butler.
Brilliant. Should I ask you some serious questions? I guess the main one, the big change since obviously we played each other early in the season, is that you've got a new manager in charge now. Before we talk about McKenna, on the subject of the previous manager, Paul Cook, would you say at the time of his sacking, do you think it was the right thing to do?
I mean, in hindsight, everybody's going to say yes. At the time, I was pretty 50-50 amongst the fan base. You know, football's a very passionate game. Fans are very passionate about, obviously, you know, so it's a passionate game, but very, very passionate. Those that wanted him out were getting louder and louder on the terraces about wanting him out. Numerous reasons. He wouldn't have a plan B. We were constantly playing the same formation, no change. He was very strict in the way that he wanted to play, never mixed it up. His substitutions would never mix. He'd never change formation during the game, whether we needed a goal or whether we needed to sit back and protect what we have. It was one way of playing and that way only. You know, obviously, again, looking back at where he's gone to Sheffield, he's still not set the world on fire going down to the National League. Paul Cook was sensational for Portsmouth and Wigan. There's no doubt he's a very good manager. It didn't work out at Ipswich. It never ever got going. We played in spits and spurts. We would wipe the floor with teams. Portsmouth away, Wickham away, come to sort of first in my mind. But there were too many performances. Obviously, the straw that broke the camel's back, sorry, just to cut to the chase, was Barrow in the FA Cup, where we drew and then lost in a replay on ITV. I mean, when we drew at home, that's when he got sacked. And I mean, you saw how bad we were in the replay when he had been sacked. We were terrible away from home. So there was something going on there with the squad. He never looked great without his number two, Liam Richardson, who, of course, has done wonders at Wigan. So, as I said, Jordan, it seems like it was definitely the right decision. But at the time, it was very much 50-50 amongst the fan base.
The new chap then, Kieran McKenna, bit of an unknown. What's the backstory with him?
Yeah, I don't think there was a single town fan that had him in the running. You know, you scroll through Twitter and everybody's got an opinion. There are people who think they know, and then people who say they definitely know and in the know and or don't know. But there was never a rumor about McKenna coming on board. I mean, it's turned out to be an inspired signing. It feels like a signing the way that he's come on board. He was, you know, an integral part of Solskjaer's team at Manchester United. No matter what you think of Solskjaer at United, look at how poorly they're doing since Solskjaer left. And under his tenure, they did have some fantastic results. And apparently McKenna was integral, you know, with the tactics and the thinking of the style of play. Incredibly bright young manager. He's got Mark Ashton, our chief exec, was really bigged up how high his IQ was and how that was important when they met. You know, he's a very intelligent guy. He has a way of thinking about football, not just tactically, but how you should do things off the field, how the club should be set up, like how everything should be done from the youth system point of view. He's really interesting listening to on all his post-match and pre-match interviews as well. I think that the guys who run the podcast, mainly the East Anglian Daily Times, they love interviewing him because he gives such in-depth, detailed answers to all their questions. Very unlike a lot of managers who just either talk about themselves or just come out with the normal platitudes as game of two halves, we were unlucky today, referee's fault, da-da-da-da-da. He's very concise, very considered, very calm. I think he's impressed everybody. I know there's been a few games that we've not been able to turn the draws into wins. That's the only tiny, that's like a 1% kind of thing we could have worked on. But I mean, at the time, as I said, no one thought of Kieran McKenna coming on, but a slight gamble perhaps. But at the moment, it looks like an inspired appointment.
I heard a rumour that Ipswich had a look to their neighbours in Cambridge and saw that hiring a 35-year-old was the way forward to get results. So you're welcome, Ipswich Town. What kind of football has McKenna got you playing then? Like, what's the style? What's the formation? And who are the key players that he's sort of driving the success that you guys are having on the pitch at the moment?
Yeah, so I mean, I was saying about Cook not wanting to leave 4-3-3. McKenna has played 3-5-2 in every single game. There are differences in terms of in and out of possession. Sometimes in 3-5-2, where a lot of the games actually, and this comes to the second part of your question, who are the most important players? This isn't a secret. It's not like I'm giving away, you know, Mark Bonner will scout and watch Ipswich's last six games. I'm sure his coaching staff will know exactly what to expect. But as Oxford, we're so close to winning that game, and Plymouth found at the weekend, we have sort of got a style that's very difficult to stop. So we have this 3-5-2 where the two wing-backs are Burns and Dominic Thompson, who's on loan from Brentford. And Thompson almost plays as a traditional left-back. Like, he will have license to go forward, but Burns almost plays as a right winger. So you've got that as a slight difference in terms of your traditional 3-5-2, where you've got one side going further forward than the other side. Danasian, then, who's the right side of centre-half, almost comes across as a right-back. And as I said, Thompson plays left. We then have always one striker, whether it be Norwood, Bonn or Piggott. It's an embarrassment of riches in League One. Caden Jackson came out of nowhere to start playing when McKenna first took over and was doing brilliantly, but he's done his hamstring. He'll be out for the rest of the season, which is a bit of a blow because he's our main striker with real raw pace. But Norwood did well on Saturday, so I couldn't tell you who will pick. McKenna changes it up all the time. He says he scouts the opposition and plays who he believes will trouble the opposition most. So you might say Bonn is the best all-round striker left without Jackson being there. But he hasn't started the last two games. We had Piggott at Oxford started and Norwood played against Plymouth. Bonn came on in both games. And then behind him, it's two of three in terms of Aluko, Selina and Connor Chaplin. And they play as almost two number 10s, but then sometimes they play wider. Again, depending on the opposition, they might play narrower and play two number 10 kind of roles and pick up pieces around the strike and pick the ball up from deep and sort of go on. And then we have two sort of centre midfielders, and that's most recently been no change there, Morsi and Backinson. Backinson online from Bristol City. And Sam Morsi, I'd go to say, I think, and I call a spade, I'm not being biased. You know, we have been poor in places this season. Morsi is the best midfielder in this division. Cambridge have got to look out for him, but he's very difficult to stop. He's comfortable in possession. And one thing he's added to his game now, he makes late runs into the box. He scored on Saturday. very difficult to pick those. I mean, for any team, if you've got a runner from the middle of the park starting deep, very difficult to pick up. So Backinson usually stays a bit deeper and tries to shut down attacks. He's got quite long legs, like Nick's possession, plays it off to the wing backs and the centre halves. And Morsi will burst into the box or the late doors. He also is quite comfortable bursting through the middle of the park with the ball as well. So very good at getting our attacks going. And then our three centre halves, Edmondson's out now, it looks like, to the end of the season. He was our left-sided centre half, bought from Rangers in the summer. And instead of him, we've got Cameron Burgess, who we bought from Accrington Stanley, $750,000. Again, brilliant backup in League One. He's been fantastic as a left-sided centre-half since he's come on. He's very, very good in the air. If Cambridge are looking to target him maybe on the ground, that might be one area of weakness. Wolfenden's the middle of the three. He's been, looked like he possibly could have left in January, but as a League One centre-half, so comfortable in possession. Again, he'll burst through in the middle of the park if there's putting no pressure on him, get us going. He can run 20, 30 yards of the ball sometimes. And then Backinson will fill in at centre-half. So that these are the differences in possession that keeps us going. And then Danasian is an all-round, just really good defender. So, and lastly, just to finish this segment, Walton in goal. Unbelievable goalkeeper. I mean, all these clean sheets we've kept. He's very good with the ball at his feet. Comes and gets crosses. He's just got a bit of a presence. But he actually hasn't had to do too much because, I mean, Plymouth didn't have a shot on target on Saturday. So 3-5-2 on Saturday, Jordan. Cambridge have got to deal with that and all those things I've said in there.
Yeah, you know full well we don't do very well against wing-backs, so it could be a difficult one on Saturday. I like when I said key players, you've talked me through the whole squad, but I guess that's a representation on just how well you're playing as a unit since he's come in. You know, like, your form has really, really improved. You beat Plymouth on Saturday. They're fourth in the table. You're only 5 points outside of the playoffs yourselves. Do you think you can make the playoffs, or do you think it's a little bit too late for Ipswich this season?
Yeah, again, overall, the fan base, I think, probably 90% are in agreement that we're just running out of road. Mm. You know, in terms, we're going at on a tremendous rate. You know, we're smashing it down the motorway at 80 mile an hour, beating teams, playing well. But we're running out of road. You know, we've only got 6 games left. I know you guys have got 7 games left. We've only got 6 games left. We realistically, I mean, some fans saying we need to win all 6. I don't think that's the case, but we probably need to win 5 out of 6. And we've not done that all season, as well as we've done under McKenna. We've only lost 2 games under his charge. We've not conceded in the last 6 at home. Fantastic to watch. It has been so much more enjoyable. It's been crap supporting Ipswich for actually quite a long while. The last 3 or 4 months have been really, really enjoyable. So that's a huge tick in the box. But I think if you pushed me like head over heart, it's too late.
Yeah.
Never say never, but realistically, it's too late. Even if we win against you guys and beat Shrewsbury, we've still got some hard games to come. I just think the teams above, the difference in this division this year, the teams at the bottom, you know, your Cruz, your Doncaster, you know, you boys got a good result against Wimbledon, but they haven't won for like 2 months or something ridiculous. 20 games was it, I think, Wimbledon hadn't won. You know, teams like that this year who just don't win.
Yeah. Right. Two quick fire questions to end the interview. First one, Ben, score prediction for Saturday.
Yeah. I think we will win, and history tells me it's as our form. We don't concede many goals, so I've gone 2-0 town.
Nice. I hope you're wrong, but I have a feeling you might be right. And final question, this might be redundant because the police might say we can only go to one pub, but what's the pub situation like for you fans who would like a nice pre-match beverage?
Well, I know for a fact that the pub I always frequent before a town game, the Greyhound, which is an Adnams pub, which is my favourite brewery.
Oh, we love Adnams. We love Adnams. We do.
South Ward, of course, excellent, seaside resort in Suffolk. The Greyhound is it always accepts away fans. There are Plymouth fans in there, only a few, but I think because it's a bit off the beaten track from the train station. You've got to go past the ground. But it's only a 10-minute walk the other side. It's not far and it's worth it. They do good food, really nice atmosphere. The sun was out on Saturday. Lots of tables out the back, loads of places to sit and stand. try and get there early if you want a more comfortable seat. And but I know I've seen Gillingham fans in there this year. Lots of opposition fans, not huge amounts because they're probably in bigger numbers in the town centre. But the Greyhound is my recommendation.
Fantastic. Ben, thank you so much for your time. All the best for the rest of the season.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks very much to Ben for that. Let's get into some of the numbers here. This is from a Twitter account called The Kit Factor. Kieran McKenna has been in charge of Ipswich for 17 games, so 37% of the season. 10 wins, 5 draws and 2 defeats in that time, 12 clean sheets and only 6 conceded. Over the season, that's 97 points and only 16 goals against. And that's all without a prolific striker. This is clearly the league position is probably, it's probably a little bit of a lie, I'd probably say, Tom. Is it for your money? Are these actually? I mean, you know, those numbers don't lie. Are they one of the best sides in the division?
Yep. I think.
Great. Wrap that up.
Yeah.
Job done. Move on.
Cracking insight as always. I think like at the start of the season, they sort of flattered to deceive a little bit, didn't they? Like they had this very expensively assembled squad. I think they made like 20 something signings in the summer, didn't they? Under Paul Cook, and at times it looked like they were just about starting to get going, and then you know they'd suffer a setback like chucking away a 2-goal lead against little old Cambridge, and then they obviously made the change, and I think since McKenna's come in, yeah, like you say, those figures don't lie. They're obviously a very good team. It's a very difficult challenge, but I guess at the start of the season, this is one of those games that you look out for immediately, isn't it? Portman Road, I don't know if they'll sell out necessarily, but you know, big following from us. I think we found out recently that the last time we took 2,000 fans away from home was actually against Ipswich back in the 90s. So,
in a league game,
yeah. And it's one that we can all look forward to. It's obviously a very difficult challenge, but a bit of pressure off. Maybe we can go there and cause a bit of an upset.
Another really strong away following, as you say, 2,000. And that includes free football specials from Cambridge, which you absolutely love to see. Casper, how nice is it, first of all, to go there without any pressure for points? And secondly, can we realistically have any hope of actually beating Ipswich?
I'll do them in reverse. So if we play in all amber, our extrapolated points total for the season is 84. So
Andy's done the hard work there. Just send that over to the club.
Andy's done the hard graph, so I'm not too intimidated by their 97 point season if we're an 84 point season team in all amber.
In all amber.
In all amber, disclaimer, caveat. I think it's great that we're going to be able to go there. Sold out away end, not too much pressure. Actually, I think that probably puts a bit of pressure on them. They are in the playoff race just about. We've got absolutely nothing to fear, nothing to worry about, apart from maybe anyone who remembers what happened at Sheffield Wednesday or the last time we played on a sort of big stage.
But on that point, I think we sort of mentioned this just before we started recording, that like now that we don't need the points, it'd be good to see different ways of trying to deal with big stage, big pitch, I assume they've got. I don't know if they play free at the back, but you know, like trying to deal with all these things for the rest of the season in preparation for next season.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I was saying to you guys before, like when you're trying to reach a points total, like we were at, 2 p.m. yesterday, we were all in the pub. I was like, I'll take any positive outcome anyway, anyhow, don't care. Now you might say that we're basically safe. Suddenly the pendulum swings back a bit towards, how are we going to start to answer some of the hard questions that we've been asked all season and we're going to be asked again next season, like how do we cope with this? So great position for us to be in. It's just a delight for us as a fan base to be able to go to somewhere like Ipswich without too much pressure. We've got Wigan and Sunderland away still to come, and we don't have to be overly concerned in terms of points. Just go and have fun and enjoy it. Like, this is the whole point of getting promoted and being in League One, is to get to go to some new places, some bigger grounds, play some harder teams. And hopefully, as I say, even I'll keep the ambitions really modest for those 3 away games. Like at this point, if we can win one of those, I'd be over the moon. I don't so much mind which one it is, but if I was choosing, being really selfish, and I would choose Saturday in that Ipswich game for just for the number of fans and the sort of atmosphere that I think we're going to have in that away end. So cool. Let's see what happens.
It's going to be, it would be special, wouldn't it? Let's tackle the Wes question at Ipswich. I mean, he has to start, doesn't he, at Ipswich? This is like narrative all over it. This is like bursting with narrative, isn't it, Tom?
It is indeed, and I love a good narrative.
Oh, you love a good narrative. I've always said that about you.
it'll be an interesting reception for him, I think. Just like the game in the Abbey where they spent 90 minutes taking the piss out of his ponytail, which is now gone. So have that Ipswich. I'd love it. I'd
Can you imagine?
Love
Can you imagine?
It.
Like a late 85th minute.
Come on.
This is like if we win a penalty.
Oh, yeah.
How does that play out? Does he have to take it? Is that definitely a thing? Or
yeah. Whereas Houlihan punches Joe Ironside in the face and takes it.
I'd be so interested to see what his celebration would be like if he did score.
He's got to get the roly-poly out again, surely.
Yeah.
That's the trademark celebration.
But in front of the home end.
In front of the home end. Yeah, sort of Adebayor style, like run the length of the pitch, do a little roly-poly and see what happens.
Yeah. God, yeah, well, look, we're all looking forward to it. It's another one of those big days out. This is why we're here. And here's to one more Wes Houlihan masterclass. If he's going to put it out of the bag anyway, it's got to be here. Anyway, boys, let's wrap up there. Casper, thanks for sort of, you know, getting through your hangover enough to join the pod today.
Well, that's it. I mean, a real test of who's the biggest lightweight, I think, is next Saturday, surely, at Ipswich.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens.
And I can't remember who's on the pod next Sunday, but Godspeed. Godspeed. Tom, thanks again, mate, for being on the pod. And I'm going to go order a massive takeaway now. What are you going to do?
Probably going to go to bed, to be honest. We're recording this at 2:00 on a Sunday afternoon, by the way. So that should tell me how much we enjoyed Wimbledon away yesterday.